Hello and welcome to InsurTech Business Series podcast. My name is Damola Oloko. This is our first podcast series. I'm joined by
Olumi, and I am your co-host. Hi, Damola. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, Olumi. How is everything? How is the family?
Fine. How have you been coping amidst this lockdown and the pandemic?
Oh, well, the key word there is different. You know, everything has been different. So definitely all that you must have been doing before, you have to find a new way to do them, you know. So that's what I've been trying to do, and just really trying to adapt, you know, and just make everything better even afterwards. After the lockdown, so yeah. So how? What about you?
Awesome. Well, I've been working from home. You know, been working remotely. I mean, who would have thought in January 2019 that most of us would be forced?
I know, right?
To have to learn to make use of technology, which is a good thing. I mean, judging by what we intend to discuss today, it's actually a very good way to start. I mean, we don't pray that this whole pandemic will last for a very long time. We're even praying that we find a cure, judging by the numbers already. But it has forced a lot of us to look inward, to look at technology as an option to carry out most of our activities. And I think for me, that's a good one. I mean, that's the only way I've been able to survive this whole lockdown and the current global pandemic.
This podcast is possible because of technology. Gonna have times where you really have to go to a radio station to be able to make this kind of thing available for listeners and stuff like that. Yeah. But now today, with technology, hey, you can actually have your own radio station. You know, have your own channel. You know, and that's why we came up with this idea to, you know, have this kind of platform where we can actually come and talk about things that affect the insurance and insurtech space, you know. So,
So you say that it's actually an interesting one with the topic we are going to be discussing today, which is the future of insurtech globally and in Nigeria. I mean, there's going to be a lot of technology disruptions in the insurance space.
Yes.
There's going to be a lot of tech companies coming up with insurance solutions, insurance providers that are just going to be, take for instance, now you have the likes of Lemonade, you have the likes of Bima, and the likes of them that are disrupting that particular insurance space. So it's important and it's essential for us to discuss the future of insurtech globally and in Nigeria. Whether we like it or not, this whole pandemic would be shaped the world in terms of technology demand. So it's really an exciting one. What do you think?
Yes, it really is. I mean, I love that this is the first topic that we are speaking about on this podcast series, you know, because I'm an advocate for the use of technology. And generally, I mean, we'll hear from our guests, which we are going to be introducing soon. The perception of technology in the insurance industry worldwide is quite low, you know. So, but with this COVID-19 pandemic, you know, you'd see that a lot of companies would begin to see the importance of imbibing technology. I was listening to Brett King, who is a futurist in America, talk, and he says that post-COVID, I mean, you see more and more banks and insurance companies, financial institutions, you know, do away with some of their branches. You know, many of them are going more tech enabled now. So people will be imbibing a lot of tech now. And so it's important that we begin to have some of these conversations around how this technology can work and how companies should be embracing them. We'll be talking to industry leaders, tech enthusiasts, so who will come on the show to come and discuss it. And for today's show, we'll be talking to Rob Galbraith, who is an author, is a speaker, and a thought leader in insurance and insurtech industry with many years of experience in the insurance industry in America. like I said, he's an author, and the name of his book is The End of Insurance as We Know It. He's known as the most interesting man in insurance. We had a really robust conversation with him, and it's one that I'm looking forward to having our listener here, you know, and I'm sure that to really ignite some conversations even at the top level.
So I couldn't help but notice but our brief profile about the book you wrote, The End of Insurance as We Know It. What exactly do you think he was talking about?
I mean, this is something that he's going to talk about, definitely, yeah. But, you know, I'm lucky to have a copy of the book. And, I mean, going through the book, you see that he talks a lot about how the insurance industry is going to change through technology. It definitely is the end of how we know it.
We'll be right back. How have you been coping with the lockdown? And how have you been surviving this COVID-19 pandemic? How has that affected you?
It's been a big change. I feel very blessed that you know, I'm healthy, my family's healthy. It's stopped all my travel. So I've spent an extended period of time with my wife and my three children. And we really don't go out of the house. We go to the grocery store, and we can order on the computer online, and they just drop it off in our trunk, so we don't have to, you know, go into the store or touch anything. And we bring them back. We were so excited to get toilet paper yesterday. never driven so far, been so excited to get just a few rolls of toilet paper. But other than that, you know, just kind of going out for walks and riding bikes, keeping distance. We played a lot of board games and cards, so it's been great time to spend with the family, because I'm traveling so much. So, you know, in some ways it feels a bit of a blessing, and most of the work that I can do, you know, remotely. I work at home anyway, so has not had a big personal impact on us, thankfully.
Like you said, a lot of change has been brought to how we live our lives, you know, and also even in business, you know. But before we go into the changes that has come into the insurance space, even before the COVID-19, so can you tell us about your background in insurance?
Sure. So I've spent over 20 years in the insurance industry. I was an economics major in college at university, and then I worked actually at the Federal Reserve, the Central Bank of the United States, at Rada College. So that was a wonderful experience in Washington, D.C. And then I moved to San Antonio, Texas, where I now live. And a friend of mine told me about an insurance company called USAA that insures military members and their families. And so I started working there, and they had a bank, and they had an investment company that, you know, invested in stocks and bonds, and then they had an insurance company. And I happened to get a job on the insurance side, but I always wanted to get over to banking or investments. I thought, oh, insurance is boring, you know, this is lame. And it was the biggest part of the company. And so I started learning about it, and I got a professional designation called the Chartered Property Casualty Underwriter, or CPCU, that many professionals get here in the US. And so as I started learning about it and understanding how much it helps people when they have a devastating loss, you know, they have a you know, tropical cyclone or, you know, a large wildfire or whatnot, and helps them, you know, recover from these devastating events. I met a man from India, and he said he always wanted to work in insurance because as a boy, his village was just ravaged by a cyclone. And, you know, there was no such thing as insurance. Everyone just had to use their own personal savings, what little they had, and rely on each other as, you know, his neighbors and his families, but you know, it took them a very, very long time to recover because they were just relying on each other. They had no such thing as insurance. And so over time, I just really grew to love the industry. And, you know, I can't imagine now working in, you know, any other industry. I love working in insurance.
Hi, my name is Joel Masharia. I'm the co-founder of Motisure, where we provide last mile distribution of microinsurance products. Keep listening to the InsurTech Business Series to get the latest on insurance and InsurTech within and outside of Africa.
Okay, that's great. So I mean, I've followed you a while, and I see this alias, the most interesting man in insurance. How did that come about? I'm really interested in knowing how that came about.
Yeah, so I actually, one of the very first podcasts that I ever did, I talked to the host about some experiences that I've had in insurance. So I tell people that I'm quite boring. You know, I am not very adventurous. I don't go, you know, skydiving or bungee jumping, don't have a motorcycle. I don't, you know, I'm very risk adverse. I've never broken a bone or anything. So insurance kind of, I guess, suits my personality. But in insurance, I've done some pretty cool things. So I've actually chased supercells, big thunderstorms with, you know, hail, and driven into the hail and to try to work with scientists to observe hail. Hail is not understood very well because it melts. So this, you know, these huge kind of, you know, chunks of ice that come from the sky sometimes in a very severe storm and has tornadoes and the violent winds and everything. And so to drive into the storm rather than, you know, away from the dark clouds, just to learn about them and study them was a pretty cool experience. I've also been, you know, following cyclones, been on tops of roofs, seeing just some of the devastation, you know, kind of allowed in before other people were allowed in, and just to kind of see the power of these storms. I happened to go to Hawaii to speak at a conference, and I landed about an hour later. There was a 6.9 magnitude earthquake that led to Kilauea, which is the only active volcano in Hawaii, actually having some lava flows, which ended up wiping out some homes and lighting some cars on fire, and you know, all while I was there in Hawaii. And so yeah, I've just had, you know, some pretty neat experiences. I've been, you know, featured on news programs and other things that my kids now are bored of seeing their dad on TV. So yeah, the host just said, oh, you know, you're the most interesting man in insurance, and so it kind of stuck. And yeah, everyone kind of knows, and people like it now when they meet me, they see my profile on LinkedIn, they'll say, oh, you know, I'm talking to the most interesting man in insurance. So yeah, people have fun with it. So that's how it stuck.
Wow, that's great. I mean, those are really cool experiences. So now, you have a book, yes, about InsurTech. And myself and Finn were speaking earlier, and I mean, look at the title, and it says end of insurance as we know it, you know. And then, you know, you know, ask now, should incumbents now be scared because, you know, you're saying that insurance is going to change, you know, so should incumbents, you know, be scared of the future or even the now, because actually those changes are imminent?
I think they should be scared a little bit, and I say that because you know, insurance in many parts of the world, such as where I'm sitting in the United States, and you know, Western Europe and some Asian countries, it's a very mature industry, and the top companies have been around for decades. So in the United States, for example, of the top 10 insurance carriers, the youngest carrier, the one that was started the most recently, was in 1937. you know, 85 years or 80, whatever that is, 83 years ago. So, you know, there's just not a lot of dynamic change and turnover in the industry. And so it can get very stale and very complacent and not serve the needs of customers well. So I think that's why a lot of these insurtech startups are, you know, pose kind of an interesting challenge to them. Right now, a lot of them are looking to partner together because incumbents have a lot of advantages. Certainly the size, certainly we have lots of regulation here in the United States that insurance companies must follow. So I think it's, you know, right now we'll see how those partnerships go over the next 2-3 years. I think some will work out, but I think others will not. The pace of change, it's kind of like a really big airline, international airline that's kind of flying right at altitude and just kind of cruising versus a little model rocket ship that you might build in your backyard that just shoots up really quickly, right? And also can fall to the ground really quickly, and it's trying to get those two to to kind of fly next to each other, right, and be companions. And so that's just very difficult. The startups move at a much faster speed than the incumbents. I think in many other markets, what I've seen across the world, where there's not a well-established insurance industry, that the startups actually could quickly come to dominate and serve the needs of many people. I've been so fortunate that so many people around the world have discovered my book and found value in it from some of these countries, certainly including Nigeria, but also Mongolia. It's actually being translated by a team of four into Mongolian right now. There's also three people in Iran that are translating it into Persian or Farsi for the local audience there. Many areas in South America, Africa, some countries in Asia, Central Eastern Europe. For countries that don't have as an established a market, it's kind of proving to be a roadmap of, if you were to start an insurance industry from scratch, or essentially from scratch, how would you do it? And I think you would certainly do it in a way that's different than a mature market such as the United States, Great Britain, Germany, other countries.
Rob, I was going to ask, insurtech, should they disrupt or collaborate with incumbents? What do you think? What would you advise? Say, for instance, our regular traditional insurance companies, would you advise that this is the time for them to disrupt that particular industry with, insurance technology, or would you advise that they collaborate with, existing ones? What do you think?
Hello, this is Pat Callahan, the insurance elephant, calling from near Buffalo, New York, about 5,300 miles from Lagos. I enjoy listening to the InsurTech Business Series, Without It Amolo Loco, because it proves that even though we are thousands of miles different, the insurance business is not that much different. The concepts and topics that are covered on the InsurTech Business Series, they could be handled the same way right here in Western New York State. So listen in. It's a great podcast, great global and local guests, and it just proves it's a small world for insurance.
So I think it depends. I know that's an easy answer or way to not answer the question. But I think it depends because certainly incumbents have an advantage. They have established relationships. They, are already regulated. They have products in the marketplace. They, in theory, have information about their customers and about losses. And they have, just a wealth of data and information. So they just may need help in certain areas. And that often is technology. Maybe they don't, aren't accessible very well from a computer or a mobile phone. or you know, the products are difficult to understand or use, or just to service, like if people want to make changes or get a new, you know, add to their products, you know, it's just a lot of what we call friction. It's hard to do. So I think for those types of things, startups can definitely help them as they kind of collaborate together. The startups, again, move a lot faster. And so if they want to be able to be responsive to customer needs, collaboration can work really, really well. I think the challenge is that, again, as I mentioned, you know, they're just moving at different speeds. And so oftentimes that these incumbents, you know, there's a lot of people that they have to have a lot of meetings, and there's not one decision maker. You might have 8 or 10 people that all have to say yes. And, you know, it just takes a long time to get everybody on board or to agree. They may not all agree. And so things kind of get put on the shelf and have to wait. And so all that takes time, all that costs money for a startup, right? Because they may have to pay programmers and other people. Their expenses don't necessarily go away, even if a project, you know, drags out or, you know, gets put on the shelf. So I think sometimes incumbents just need to just move forward on their own and not try to collaborate and do their very best. Certainly do their homework. One of the reasons I wrote the book was so that technologists and entrepreneurs and people from outside the insurance industry could get a crash course in insurance, learn about some of the concepts. I have a lot of a glossary with a lot of insurance specific terms and concepts to make it accessible, where you don't have to get a professional designation in insurance. You can just, you know, read the book or listen to the book. And you know, very quickly get up to speed. So I actually don't see a lot of disruption per se happening today, and I'd like to see more. I think there's not enough. So I think it's important to kind of have a balance. And I think over time, that's what we'll see. We'll see some incumbents that you know, adapt and change and partner and stay quite relevant and on top of the market. And I think we're going to see others that don't, and those will fade away, and those will start losing out to some of the disruptors. And most of the disruptors will fail, unfortunately. That's just the nature of you know, the economy in any industry. When you have a lot of startups, they can't all succeed, but a few will succeed. And I think, you know, 2 or 3 are probably going to be household names in 5 to 10 years that don't exist today.
You know, being a very mature industry, I mean, around the world, you know, they're quite sluggish to change. And then because of that, the fact that they want to protect that industry, there are barriers to entry, you know, that have been put up. You know, for example, capital requirements. You know, so how do you think that insurtech startups can navigate those barriers?
With capital requirements, I think that has been a very big barrier to entry for startups. So I don't know how many have actually tried to go out and raise that capital from, you know, investors and others that might be willing to lend them. I know some have done it through reinsurance companies. I think that there are also potential solutions out there that don't operate exactly the way that insurance operates, but could potentially be designed to provide customers with the same downside protection, the same financial protection against loss that insurance does. And I call this, you know, a kind of a new risk transfer paradigm or quasi insurance. So, you know, an example I use is credit cards that, you know, a lot of people for smaller losses, and certainly this isn't going to cover your home or, you know, your automobile potentially, but maybe for smaller losses like your mobile phone, you know, if it gets damaged or whatnot, you may not buy traditional insurance on that product. You may just, you know, use a credit card or other product, a loan of some type to pay for a new one. And so I think there are, or again, you know, there's crowdfunding, right? Or crowdsourcing or peer-to-peer lending. There's so many different kind of new ways of doing finance that are coming up in the fintech space that I think that certainly that would be a place to kind of look from an insurtech space and kind of see if there's alternatives to the traditional insurance paradigm when it comes to some of those barriers to entry.
Picking up what you said the previous time, we're talking about seeing more disruptions in the industry. And I wanted to find out, what exactly do you mean by disruptions? Are we talking about disruptions in underwriting processes and claims? I mean, generally in all of those processes, or are we looking at a larger scale in terms of distribution channels? What exactly are we looking at in terms of strategy? What kind of disruptions, and where exactly would you like to see most of those disruptions? I mean, I know that there are some organizations that currently have reduced their turnaround time because they have a particular insurance technology that helps them to identify claims easily. So when you say disruptions, what exactly do you mean?
I think there's opportunities all across the value chain, so in all different areas. I'll start with some of the paperwork. You know, I think insurance around the world has a lot of paperwork, no matter what's involved. And there's lots of manual data, you know, entry and verification. And, you know, these processes haven't changed as much as you might think they would in our age of computers and the internet. And so there's a lot of opportunities to streamline. Many companies haven't had the incentive to streamline as much as they could because the competitors are all bogged down in the same inefficient processes. So somebody that really thought digital first, not just as a, you know, a PDF file or an image of a document, but, you know, kind of true digital formats and processing using, you know, what's known as optical character recognition, or, you know, this is software that can read, you know, handwriting and create it into digital text, natural language processing, robotic process automation. There's so many technologies out there today that can make those processes way more efficient. And a lot of insurance companies have not invested as heavily in them as they should, in my view, because they've been focused on the distribution side. So they have not focused as much on getting more efficient as trying to sell more policies and more products. And this is a bit of a conundrum for insurance companies because many of them employ people, right, that do those jobs, shuffle the papers, you know, have to do the manual data entry. And so I think they're a little bit loath to reduce their staff. Even some of the more high skill jobs that like an underwriter might do or an actuary, artificial intelligence can do a lot of that work today, you know, and you almost need a computer programmer that can code machine learning and a data scientist rather than an actuary or an underwriter. And so I think, you know, a lot of those jobs are threatened. On the distribution side, you know, I think there will still be a place for insurance agencies and brokers. I think some business can be written direct to consumer. I think they're simple enough that the consumer can understand and you can sell them direct. But I think, you know, many business insurance and others, because insurance is such a complicated product, and I think some of that complexity can be reduced, but I don't know that it can all, you know, all be eliminated. But I think having digital storefronts, digital experiences, and then people available to talk to, and that could be even a chat bot, or that could be, you know, over the phone, or it could be, you know, in person if somebody wants that. But that in person, you know, in our world of social distancing, that could be over a Zoom meeting right today. I think people are going to want to buy insurance the fastest way possible. So I think they're going to want to do some research on their own online first on the internet. But then I think at some point it's going to become overwhelming and they're going to want to talk to an expert. And so I think, you know, insurance agencies that know how to use technology smartly and interact with their carriers digitally, and then have what is known as omni-channel. So that means, you know, you can call, you can text me, you can use WhatsApp, you can, you know, Zoom call me, like, you know, however it comes in, I'm prepared to take, you know, take that customer however he or she comes to me and work with them. And then once the human conversation part is done, then maybe I follow up digitally, right? And then they can interact with the product digitally until they have another complex need that is too difficult for them to come up with their own. So I think there's definitely an opportunity to make the product simpler as well, right? Have less restrictions, less regulations. It doesn't need to be as confusing as it is. And I think more transparency is actually going to make it more robust in terms of covering more. It's going to be simpler to use, simpler to understand. And to the extent that it's simpler to use and simpler to understand, the more you can digitize it and the less you need for human involvement.
I happen to work in the insurance agency space. And I mean, I've looked at that aspect critically, and definitely, insurance agents would still be relevant, but then there still has to be some skill development in that space, because things will still definitely change in how you do business. But actually, I'm now looking at, in the broader sense now, looking at how work is going to change, And so because work is going to change, definitely it will affect insurance as well. So, and I'm talking about, the gig economy. I know you wrote about that in your book. And so I just wanted to get your thoughts about how you think that insurance can actually change in that aspect.
Insurance are actually missing out on a huge amount of opportunity. I as I mentioned, fortunate enough to travel all over the world. And in many countries, even here in the United States, I think 1 in 6 motorists is not covered by insurance. So here, again, a very mature economy where the insurance industry has been around for centuries, and yet 1 in 6 motorists don't have coverage. And we even have a special coverage that you can buy called uninsured motorist coverage. So if an uninsured motorist hits you, you have coverage on your own policy to cover that. I mean, that's just crazy, right? That it makes no sense at all. But yet that's what we've come up with. In other parts of the world, many fewer people are covered by insurance. I've been to parts where that, only 30% of people have an insurance product. And, why is it so low? And it's because it's not affordable. It's not accessible. As you mentioned, many of the policies are annual policies. You have to pay for the premiums up front. Who has that much money all at one time to pay for something that, there's probably a 5 or 10% likelihood that you'll use it. But otherwise, that money is gone, and that money could be used for something else. You could certainly save it, right? Build up a rainy day fund and others. So I think pay as you go. I think, not just monthly payments, which some insurance companies allow, but maybe even weekly or even daily. You are starting to see it with, whether you ride scooters or whether you travel, right, where you're just getting that kind of product just in time, or you can, quickly add or delete items that you want covered from a policy very quickly. But insurance has to make the products more accessible and more affordable. And so providing more payment options is one. But again, certainly making the product much more efficient and bringing the expense floor down using some of those technologies that we talked about before. So it's not so costly to adjust a claim, and it's not so costly to sell a policy, service a policy, underwrite a policy, et cetera. And that's another reason that insurance companies need to get more efficient. And many of the companies are not as efficient as it could be because they have what's known as technical debt. They've bought mainframe computers from the 1960s and 1970s and 1980s, and they're still running these systems today. Here in the United States, because of COVID-19, we've had many people, unfortunately, lose their jobs over the last month, and they're applying for unemployment insurance from the government. And now all of a sudden the government says we need programmers that know how to write in a language called COBOL, which hasn't been used in 50 years, but and IBM is now starting to offer training courses in COBOL for free to help. It's just amazing that, you know, in today's world, we're still relying on technologies that are, you know, around when, you know, man first set foot on the moon in the late 1960s. And so, again, if insurance companies cannot bring their costs down to serve these customers, then somebody else is going to do it.
What do you think is the future of the insurtech industry with COVID-19? Like, how do you think this pandemic is going to change the whole insurance industry?
A few things, and it's hard to anticipate, right, because we're in it right now. But already, I know here in the United States, and I assume this is happening all over the world, people are looking at policy language, and they're trying to understand, you know, are some losses going to be covered or not. There's talk of government regulation to retroactively make coverage have to cover some of these losses, even if the policy language is you know, very clear that you know, these types of disease is not covered. So that will be kind of an interesting fight, and regardless of whether you know, it turns out that a court finds that it is covered or is not covered, the fact that it may have to go through years of litigation before somebody, you know, gets a payment or not, is going to be a bad look for the insurance industry. People don't pay attention to their policy. They don't read their, you know, policy language. They don't know their coverages very well. And so they just assume things are covered, right, that aren't. And that's, of course, where a great insurance agent makes all the difference in the world. I think it's going to be pretty obvious that, you know, again, once again, insurance isn't covering everything that we would want it to cover from a societal point of view. You know, people are suffering, people are having losses. Either they themselves, right, got sick and there's a health expense, or they had to quarantine and so they've lost money because they weren't able to go to work, or they're, you know, out of a job now, their company's failed, or, you know, they had a restaurant, nobody's coming to the restaurant anymore, so they had to close, and they didn't get any business interruption insurance because, you know, the property wasn't damaged, there's nothing wrong with the restaurant, right? It's just, you know, nobody can go because either the government told everyone to stay in place or people are just afraid to go out. I also think that a lot of the startups are going to see an opportunity to sell directly to consumer. I don't know what it's like in Nigeria and other parts of Africa, but here in the United States, a lot of health insurance is tied to your employer. And, you know, there's other insurance products that are often offered by employers as kind of a, you know, a benefit for employees. And this has a legacy back to World War II. Here in the US, other countries, of course, have national health care and others. But to the extent that any insurance protection, and it could be life insurance, it could be health, it could be others, is tied to your job, you know, I think that's going to go away because we see how quickly people are losing jobs, unfortunately, during COVID-19. And so I think there's going to be kind of a break between, you know, that relationship between you can only get the insurance through your employer. You know, it ties back to what we were talking about with the gig economy before as well. So I think, you know, that link is going to be firmly broken. One challenge that I know when I was in Brazil last fall, and this may again be a challenge in Nigeria and elsewhere in Africa, is they said, Rob, you know, many of these our citizens, they've become reliant on the government for some of these types of protections. And now the government is, because of cost, you know, they're stripping away some of those protections. But the insurance consumer isn't educated on that they have a need for these products, right? And so trying to persuade somebody, right, to make the investment in something like a life insurance product or accidental, you know, disability or other types of products can be very challenging, particularly if they don't think it's going to, something bad's going to happen to them, right? I mean, I'm sure you heard that, like, what are the odds of a pandemic, right? You know, that'll never happen, or things like that. And then, you know, you mentioned Wimbledon, right? So there was the, you know, big tennis tournament Wimbledon in the United Kingdom. They've been paying $2 million a year for pandemic coverage for the past 30 some years, you know. And I'm sure you could look at that and say, oh, they just wasted over 70 you know, $1 million on pandemic coverage. You know, why are they throwing away their money like that? Well, now this year, the tournament's not going to be held. They're going to get $140 million to cover the losses. So now it looks like a very smart thing.
So if we are bringing some of these solutions that can make things better for insurance companies, you know, so why then is it a hard sell to C-suite executives around the world?
There's a few reasons. I think insurance, just in general, tends to be very conservative. And, you know, a friend of mine, and I mentioned this story in the book, his name is Tony Cañas. He comes from Costa Rica. And he said, "Rob, why are insurance companies all conservative?" And I said, "I don't know. They always are." I said, "I don't really have a good reason." And he said, "It's because all the risk takers have failed and they've gone bust, you know, they've gone insolvent." And so, you know, it's this, the conservative ones tend to survive in this industry. And so that made a lot of sense to me. And so I do think, you know, there's this paradox that insurance companies, which are supposed to be experts in risk, don't like ever taking a risk. So I think that's part of it, is just as a mentality.
Yeah.
I do think there's some practical reasons as well. I think, you know, you can't just screw it up, right? Like if you switch over to some technology and it's not seamless, you know, you can't lose somebody's policy information, right? Or you know, that they've paid you, or they can't, like, you know, trust is so important to the yeah. industry. And so I think, you know, anything that you do to introduce new technology comes with true practical risks, right? And it's far more complicated. I'm not an IT expert at all, but understanding your IT, you know, architecture, and you obviously have vulnerabilities in terms of data privacy, data security. You know, we read about hacking and breaches all over the place. That comes at, you know, great cost. You know, you have one shot to get it right, basically. You know, you don't get do-overs. You don't get to kind of, you know, move fast and break things, like they say. You know, I think there are some true practical limitations. Mm-hmm. That's one reason I think that the startups yeah. have an advantage over incumbents, because the startups don't have to worry about, you know, all that legacy, all that tech deck, all this, you know. So it's almost like a scar tissue that's kind of built up, like, over time, right? And so it's not the same as, you know, a new limb, right? That so it's challenging, these technologies. They come from different eras. They weren't meant to talk to each other, you know. It's like different generations, you know. We all have been with our family and we can have conversations, and sometimes it's like, "What are you talking about? I don't understand," you know. And, you know, we find it hard to relate across generations, you know, like trying to explain to your grandfather what TikTok is, you know, they might get really confused. So that's kind of the way it is with these technologies, right? They come from different eras and different times. They don't work well together, and so that's a big challenge for incumbents.
You know, starting these conversations is definitely the right step, and those are things that we want to do, and we're happy to have you in our first podcast. So we'll be having some of these conversations more often, and so we really love to have you again.
I was also open that based on the fact that we've been unable to carry out our conference, we were thinking if there's a possibility of speaking to our audiences so we can learn from your wealth.
Thank you so much for having me on. I love this podcast idea. I'm honored to be your first guest, and I look forward to you know, hearing many more episodes. So yeah, I'm happy to speak by, you know, Zoom for any conference or seminar or any ways to connect. And I'm certainly hope that one day when all this is over, I can come to Nigeria and we can meet in person and share a meal together and you know, continue the conversation for sure. You know, really appreciate you championing you know, kind of the InsurTech movement and what it can do for Nigeria, for Africa, and for you know, many people all over the world that you know, could benefit from insurance but need it to work better than it does today to serve our needs in the 21st century.
Oh, so that was Rob Galbraith, and I really want to say thank you for your time today. I mean,
yes.
For joining our first podcast, it means a lot. And judging by what you said, I mean, you said a whole lot about what's going to happen in the insurance industry. And for me, I think my take home is the fact that insurance is not going to be business as usual. There's going to be a lot of changes in the insurance industry based on the fact that now we are faced with a pandemic that has fast-tracked most of all of these changes. What do you think, Damola, would be your own take home?
Yeah, I took away a few things. And one of the things he said that struck me was that, you know, when he talked about the fact that insurers being risk managers, usually running away from from risk. I think that with technology, you know, a lot of this risk that some companies tend to run away from might now become more attractive, you know, in the market, which would definitely create more opportunity in terms of products, which the customers are looking for, you know, more product flexibility, different diverse products. You know, you can't just have a straight jacket product, you know, car insurance. Everybody is taking the same type of car insurance. You know, should be more diversity in the market,
yeah,
so that people are more encouraged to take up this, and in the long run can improve the market penetration. Mm. You know, that's what tech can do. And you know, we're glad to be a part of that conversation, help to ignite some of those conversations, you know, see how it goes from there. This is really great.
Yeah. I mean,
at InsurTech Business Series, we want to encourage learning, we want to initiate innovations, and also help to connect people with others so that innovation can grow, you know. And so it's really an interesting time. In our new segment, FBN Holdings are looking to sell their stake in FBN Insurance to South African-based Sanlam Emerging Markets. According to the company's secretary, the move is part of FBN Holdings' strategic objectives. You know, FBN Holdings is looking to sell all its 65% equity in FBN Insurance. So definitely we'll be seeing a lot of change in that area. I mean, a lot of changes is really happening in the insurance industry already, so that is a major one. And following reports that all insurance companies in Nigeria are allegedly being forced to contribute 10 million naira each by the regulators, the NIA chairman, Mr. Tope Smart, has come out to debunk that story. So recently, insurance companies and the regulator actually contributed to the federal government in line with the response to the COVID-19, as well as providing free life insurance covers for all health workers. So the story broke that insurance companies were being forced, mandated by the regulator NICOM to contribute, and that has already been debunked by NIA. The Future Africa has launched an investment fund called Future Africa Collective, where qualified investors can co-invest with Future Africa. This, according to Inyabo Eji, who is one of the co-founders, can be a weapon of innovation and revolution in Africa. You know, so this is really an opportunity for InsurTech startups to key into and, you know, get that funding that they really need at this time. So yeah, those are the new stories that we have at the moment. And
so thank you once again. Like my co-host said, Damola, we really appreciate you guys joining us. And then we wouldn't have achieved this space without you. And so we would like to have your reviews, your comments on if you think we could actually take this particular series a top notch higher, you could let us know. Also, we would appreciate it if we have a bit of InsurTech enthusiast reach out to us. I mean, it would be really nice to record one of our podcasts with you sharing your views. Thank you once again. I remain Olini, your host, and
yes, I'm Damola. And don't forget that you can follow us on Twitter at Insure365N. And you can follow me on Mr_Musky. And this podcast is going to be bi-monthly. And like she said, we'll be looking forward to having you on board. Just reach out to us and we can work something out. So let's continue to have that conversation and see you next time.
You stay safe and stay home.
Safe. Bye. Yeah. Bye.